Hey, folks, and welcome to this week's podcast. Today's guest, James Hand, is somebody I'm pretty sure a listener sent me an email a year or two ago saying, here's a guy you are just absolutely going to love. And it's true. I just absolutely love this guy. Long story short, he started making music as a teenager, played around West Texas forever, and then became sort of nationally famous in 2006 when he made his first nationally distributed record. He was in his 50s at that point, about 20 years ago. Interesting guy, a one of a kind. I want to point out the whole show is available at wfmu.org/Michael, and we played a lot of James Hand records, so if you want to hear those, head over there and have a listen. Meanwhile, hope you enjoy this, my chat with James Hand. With the fight. Then it's me and him, both of us out on a limb, do the same thing every night.
We got to get him something to watch. When I get drunk, he starts singing, and he does a little winging, and we both turn her up another notch. Through all our years together, we're birds of a feather, my little feather pal and me. He's a fine little buster, never be a feather duster, cause I love him, can't you see? When that cage starts to rattle, I know he's doing battle, and I jump up to help him with the fight. Then it's me and him, both of us out on a limb, do the same thing.
All right, there is the great James Hand, and I believe he is on the telephone with us now. Good morning, Mr. Hand. How are you?
Fine, sir. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. I see that you are playing this October at the Ponderosa Stomp, but you are playing, I notice I'm looking on your schedule, and you regularly play in Austin and around West Texas. You were born in Waco, Texas. Is that right? What did your folks do?
They rodeoed. Mom was a barrel racer, Daddy was a bareback rider, and then when they got too old to rodeo, we started training horses, and pretty much what it was.
And were they folks who were listening to music? Did they have a record player? Was the radio always on? What was the music like growing up?
Oh, yeah, yes, we had, surprisingly enough, Mama always listened to, like, Dean Martin and stuff, and when Daddy was gone, that was really before radios got to be too much in cars, so I listened to Dean Martin and, of course, Tex Ritter. And then, of course, back then there were 78 records, you know. So, I don't know. I just, some of the songs I know now, I don't know where I learned them. It just seemed like this music was always there.
Do you think there's any, like, of that Dean Martin in what you do?
Well, I jokingly tell people I think I look just like him and sound just like him. And they just, but obviously not.
Yeah, the looks, I see the resemblance, yeah. Well, how'd you pick up the guitar? Who taught you how to play the guitar?
Well, that's a good question. When I was all 10 or 11 years old, I guess, I saw one laying around, and I took a couple of lessons, and I didn't bother it again for a couple of years, and then I just learned some chords, you know, picking around, and just, you know, anything you really want to learn how to do, you don't realize how much time you put into it. And after I learned three or four chords, I started trying to holler a little bit, and then it just kind of went from there.
So how young were you when you first started playing in front of other people?
Ooh, at 13, I reckon.
And how has West Texas changed since then? I'm curious.
Well, you know, not a lot until the explosion here happened a couple of 3 or 4 years ago, and it destroyed about half the town, and it's changed quite a bit since then. But it's, you know, it's hard working for farming people, and I still know 90% of the people in town, and that's a good thing to me. You know, I mean, it's a great place to live, I think. There's some people that can't wait to get out, but they're always coming right back to it.
How hot does it get in the summertime?
Oh, Lord, it's in the 100, just like 90-something degrees down here now.
Oh, boy. So you're 13-year-olds. You're playing in front of folks. Where? Tell me, where are you playing in dances, at bars? What kind of crowds?
Well, I joined. We had a little band called the West Polka Band. And Edmund Mark, rest his soul, he was all just a bunch of kids. He hauled us around, made sure everything got done. And as little did I realize just how much that man went through so we could all have a good time. And then just like that. And then, of course, you know, in high school, got to do, high school assemblies and things of that nature. And then high school dances. And then it just, it's a good question. It just kind of morphed on to what it's become. I never really intended on even having a CD. I used to just sit in front of a tape recorder and sing, you know. But I don't know. I don't think any artist can say they really started out on a chosen path. That's okay. This is what I'm going to do. But back to your question about West. It's a great little community. It sure is.
One of the great things I think about your music is that there's some clear influences, and it's all stuff that I like, but it's also a lot of originality, and you do a great job kind of folding those two things together. So was there a point, I mean, I guess you were a teenager in the 60s, the early 60s, the mid-60s, were you going back and discovering some old music? Were you buying old records? How did you kind of, because you're not...
Well, it originally started with my grandmother. She had a Victrola, like a wind-up Victrola, and she had two or three Jimmy Rogers records, and of course I listened to them all the time, and some Led Zeppelin records, and like I say, some Tex Ritter lessons records, and when Mom and Dad was going rodeo and I stayed with her, so I had my ear to that Victrola all the time. And then as I grew older, like through high school, I never really tried to expand like to all the acid rock and stuff like that. I still just played, you know, what I knew, you know what, sadly true, just like right now, I can't write like they write right now or sing like they do right now. They're a lot more popular than I. And my high school classmates, we bump into each other every now and then, you know, and then we still laugh about how they, you know, they were a lot more musically adept than me.
Well, but was this ever a problem for you in gigs that audiences sort of want to hear a certain thing that you weren't giving them, or were they always happy with what your idea of presenting country music was?
Well, you know, not so much because like when I was a child, everybody was older, so they wanted to hear that older, you know, what I didn't know was older. I just thought it was country music, you know. And then now, when someone, you know, comes to where we're playing, they know what to expect, you know. Hmm. So I don't really know how to call it, what kind of music it would be. It's just like, it's music that if you think it's going there, it's going there. You know, I mean, it doesn't have any kind of fancy stuff to it. And I don't write because I want to sit down and write something. I write because something's happened. You know, I mean, I told someone if they wanted to write a song about hitting their thumb with a hammer, hit their thumb with a hammer. But the thing of that is, it don't count. It don't count if you do it on purpose.
Right. Yeah. I'm imagining you're in West Texas, and it's, you know, you're a young man, and you know, so we're talking about the early 70s, the late 60s, and there's no cable TV, there's no internet. Have I got the picture right that there were a lot more live music venues and people were going out and dancing and seeing music more?
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. There were, but, you know, because everything just wasn't right on the fingertip. You know, there were some good groups around here, like Billy Upmore and a bunch of them. But it was a thing to do on Saturday night to go to one of these halls. It just mesmerized me, just the whole thing about it. And of course, like I say, as I grew older, had some gentlemen play with me that were older than I, and they taught me a little bit, and the rest of it I kind of threw together, and I learned very early that if if you got people to dance, then you might get them to listen to you.
Hmm.
You know, and then that's where it all starts with. Because back then, everybody danced. The waltzes and the polkas and the stuff, things like that. But like you say, now it's all at the tip of the finger. Nobody goes any more harder.
So at what point did you start writing your own songs and adding those into the mix?
Not much later than 13 or 14.
You've got heartbreaking songs and humorous ones and songs that reflect your life. And like you said, you know, you write about things that actually happened to you, but not everybody does that. I mean, is there any way to put your finger on why you're driven to do that?
Well, escape. You know, it's an escape. It allows me to let some of that hurt out and keeps the dark away. At least keep the arms length for a little while. You know, I know that may sound a little trite, but it's true. I couldn't deign to write about a space. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I couldn't get in a group and say, okay, we're going to write about this because it's current. I don't think I could do that. I've never been asked to, but I don't know if I could or not. And the book writers, my goodness, I mean, that's amazing to keep that many storylines together and wind up with an ending. And you know, when I feel like that 3 minutes is plenty, you know, but my hat's off to every songwriter, every singer, everybody that even tries to do this for a living, because it's very, 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 very rewarding and very, very, very unrewarding at the same time.
From just the simple picture of a kid whose folks are in the rodeo and horses and beautiful part of Texas, it sounds like a pretty good first part of your life, but so where does the darkness come from?
Oh, you know, as you grow older, things you know, happen to you. But you're right. I had a wonderful childhood. I didn't learn how to walk till I got old enough, so they put me down. Because I got carried everywhere. You know, we had a very, very loving family, very, very tight-knit family. But, you know, things happen to a fellow as you go through life. And if you don't learn to write about them, they just explode inside of you, and the next thing you know, you're walking around lost, more lost than you really are. And I think that somebody has always needed to write a sad song, and somebody always has needed to write a happy song, because the way the human psyche is, it's just backwards. When you're sad, you want to hear sad songs. When you're happy, you want to hear happy songs. You know, and it should be just turned around, I think. But who knows? I know that goosebumps and childbirth, you can't take them. And whenever a good song comes to me, I get goosebumps, and I know that's God talking to me.
I know you've worked training horses. You've worked as a truck driver for many years. You worked as a bouncer. What else have you done, and were you always playing gigs while you were doing those other things?
Well, that's about all I've ever done. And yes, sir, I've always been you know, found a place to play somewhere, or some friends want me to play, or we just get together and play. It's almost like a rerun of the Little Rascals. Well, let's get a man together and put out some tickets and go somewhere. but if you ever lose the need to play or the need to sing or the want to be around people that play, then you've defeated the purpose of what God gave you to do.
I know that you've had some brushes with the law, and I know that you've written a lot of songs about your faith, and it sort of presents this picture of a complex guy. And I think what you just said about how songs keep you from not being lost and kind of help you from not keeping your demons bottled up, I think that's what I get from hearing your songs and talking to you now. I mean, you think that's a fair view of how you are or what you are?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think that's right on the nail.
So for years, you were doing this. You were working jobs to pay the rent and playing on the weekends or writing songs and I think you put out a couple records on some small labels or by yourself. And then 2006, Ray Benson from Texas band Asleep at the Wheel and producer Lloyd Maines produced this record called The Truth Will Set You Free. It's kind of your first record that was distributed nationally. It came out on Rounder. And how did that happen? Were you looking for that? Did they come and find you? What happened?
Well, actually, it was at South by Southwest. And Mr. White, who owns the Broken Spoke, a very good friend, very gracious man, he let me sit in and sing a couple of songs. And Ken Irwin happened to be there, around the records. And it went from there. And, of course, I'd met Ray around town, you know, a little bit. And we were friends. I'd never met Mr. Maines. But it was a learning experience for me. And everybody involved in it was very, 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 very knowledgeable and very kind to me, because I didn't know anything about it, really, you know. But they helped me, and
you're happy with the results?
Oh, yes, sir. I mean, who wouldn't be? I mean, but besides that, at that point in time, it was just like living a dream, you know. And then we did the second one, everything that good was added, and then the industry just kind of turned. And then, the last two I've done was Mighty Lonesome Man and on a Hill Grass Records, and then did a completely religious album called Storm Clouds in Heaven, and Deborah Perry produced both of those. And there's really not anything I could complain about, except sometimes I don't think I write as well as I ought to. I sit around and think about the people that are in the business that are far more deserving than I. And I'm a Christian man. I just want to sing and let somebody know that and people understand that I know what I'm singing about.
I don't understand. How do you say that other folks are far more deserving? How are you basing that on?
Well, they work harder at it, you know, I don't know. I've got some friends of mine around here that are just wonderful. The business such as it is, it's just tough, you know. I mean, and I'm not bemoaning that, and I'm not whining or groaning or anything like that. But even music is the only thing in the world that you don't have to go music 101. You know, it happens so instantly somewhere without hardly any training at all. Like, I can't read a note at all. And I really... I'm more comfortable singing than I am talking about it. But I want to give you honest and sincere answers, because I've seen other artists just act like that they didn't think that they needed to, you know, they thought that their art gave them the right to be rude, I guess, but I can't do that.
I appreciate it. I mean, I hope I'm not making you uncomfortable. It definitely seems like this record changed your life, changed your career trajectory for sure. And it got you, you know, to Europe, and it got you on television some. It got you also on the Grand Ole Opry, which is something so fun. Tell me about going on the Grand Ole Opry. Who else was on that night, and what that was like?
Well, Mr. Anderson was on there, and Ms. Morgan, and Sammy Kershaw, and Jimmy C. Newman, he was on it. You know, it was great. It was a thrill of a lifetime, and it was wonderful. You know, and I don't lose sight of it. And, you know, two or three times along the way, I might have shot myself in the foot a time or two, and all that comes with the program.
I read a quote where you said, sometimes I think the only person who hasn't been kind to me is me. And it's just, it does seem like you are, you know, you embrace this, the music part of it, and the rest of it you have a little bit of a hard time with. But other people have been kind to you. I know that Willie Nelson was a kind of a booster of yours for a while. Did he just see you play a gig? Because I know you played at his 4th of July picnic, which I imagine would be a fun event to go to or to play at.
Well, Cootie Lott was his stage manager, road manager for years and years, and Cootie and I were good friends, rest his soul. And he introduced me to Willie and got me in that group. And Willie was he's a kind, gracious, wonderful man. And he's helped me immensely. You know, matter of fact, I can't, just like I say, I don't say it jokingly, the only person that had been good to me is me. And that's the honest God truth.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I've heard it so much I just started believing it. You know, but I don't know anything about the business or how that works or anything like that. And I know that for 2 or 3 minutes, whenever you're singing and everything goes right, it's the best thing in the world.
As I was preparing for our chat today, I was looking through the reviews of your records, and really, it's uncanny. The reviews of your records are so enormously positive, like almost like nothing I've read before. Does that make you feel great?
It makes me the most humble. Matter of fact, it's a fine line between all shucks and thank you, you know. And it makes me very, very humble, very humble, you know. And you'll hear people say, well, it don't matter what critics say. Well, yes, it does. It matters a lot because if you take what you do to heart. I mean, I realize that there's, when I listen to the radio now, listen to some of the songs out there, you know, the worst thing a songwriter can do is say, man, I wish I'd have wrote that, you know, or man, I wish I'd have thought of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that, well, I thought of that first. Well, I wish I would have thought of that, you know. And there are songs that have yet to be written that are going to turn the world on its ear. And there are songs that have been written that have done a pretty good job of it. You know, the power of music is you can hear a song and go right back to where you were the first time you heard it, if you heard it in the first grade or if you heard it day before yesterday, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody has their soundtrack to their life, yeah. One of the words I read over and over in the coverage of you is the word authenticity. And it strikes me that people are searching for authenticity. And I'm not sure what that means, because I sort of feel like everybody is authentically themselves, whatever that means. But I mean, do you feel that coming at you? And is that something that, how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, that's a good question. It's almost like when you see a poster stand appearing live. Well, yeah, I'm also, but I think authenticity is knowing what you're singing about. And taking the time to talk to people and you know, be honorable to what you do. And just being kind to people or being nice to people, you know, as long as they'll let you. And don't be an act. You know, be real.
Do you still write? I mean, how do you write every day? How often do you write songs?
Well, I've written a lot here lately, but I don't just sit down and try to, you know, write a song. It just happens, you know, when it happens. And after all this time, I finally learned how to mash this record button on my telephone. So I can get the idea of it down and don't lose the tune. As a matter of fact, after we get through with the, I don't mean get through. I mean, whenever I'll send you one.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, have you had time? Did you raise a family? Did you manage to get that done?
Well, I married the same lady twice. and we have two sons, and they're grown.
Let me remind everybody that James Hand is our guest, and folks can go to the website jamesslimhand.com for information about where he's playing and buy some records and just get information about the James Hand news. It seems that you regularly play around Austin and sometimes other parts of West Texas, and you'll be playing, as we said, in the Ponderosa Stomp October in New Orleans.
I'm really looking forward to it. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to it. I've heard so many things about it. I've never really sang in New Orleans before, and I love Louisiana too.
I think it's a great match for you because it's a really. I've been to that festival a few times, and it's super fun, and the crowd is ready for anything and ready to have a good time and ready to hear music maybe that they're not familiar with. So it's going to be a home run for you. I'm quite sure. So these days, so you're writing songs, you're playing gigs around, and what else do you do? What else do you do to relax, to have fun?
There, I go fishing. I go fishing, and there's a couple of tanks here behind the house. This gentleman lets you go fishing at, and I got a little hammock down there. And although it's not 200 yards from the road, don't seem like it. It's just almost like being, you know, in another world. I like nature. I like wildlife, and I just like to be outside.
James Hand, once again, jamesslimhand.com, and October 7th in New Orleans at the Ponderosa Stomp, and around Austin in West Texas, check that website if you live down there and want to see him. What are your shows like these days? How long do you play? And
Usually we'll play an hour and a half, but when we get a dance, we'll play a four-hour set, you know, like a four-hour set. Like this Sunday, we'll be down. Sir?
Did you say 4 hours?
Well, you know, like a regular dance, you know.
Yeah. That's a long time, right?
Well, yes, sir, it is. You know, the first 2 hours ain't so bad, but the last two's kind of. But, yes, sir, yeah.
Let's hear Men Like Me Can Fly, James Hand. It's been a pleasure. You're an interesting guy, and the songs are... it's funny because the songs in some way speak for you, but I wanted to hear you... say it anyway. But folks, anyone not familiar with this guy needs to go and pick up some of those records and hear these amazing songs. And I'm looking forward to whatever comes next.
Well, God bless you, pal. And I really, really appreciate this. And tell everyone up there, I said hello, and I'll be looking forward to seeing everybody down yonder.
Oh, there's a place I'll soon be going, and I've been waiting for so long. For I can hear a trumpet blowing and an angel singing a song. So if you want to travel with me, well, come along but testify. For in this place where I'm a-going, even men like me can fly. Oh, there's a place right over yonder. About some hill, it's far above where mortals wander and the angels live there still. So if you want to travel with me, well, come along but testify. For in this place where I am going, even men like me can fly. My mother told me of the beauty heaven brings. Now as a man, each thing she told me holds a pair of angel's wings. Now if you want to travel with me, well, come along but testify. For in this place where I am going, even men like me
can fly.